So wait, you're going to play the intro now?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm cool with it. When do I start? It's an
absolute oh, we're running, baby.
Nah, gotcha. Across it in, looking for Garza, backside and in for the first goal in Atlanta United history from Yamil Assad. Take a look at history. Hi, y'all, and welcome to Five Stripe Final, the newly improved Five Stripe Final. We're running fancy today. Got a brand new system running things. It's just in time. Just in time for us to whip up on Orlando City. I'm J. Sam Jones from Dirty South Soccer. Joe Patrick from Dirty South Soccer is over there. Say hey, Joe.
Fuck it. We're doing it live.
We're doing it live. Always. Always. And the show we are doing live is called Five Stripe Final. The only highly... What the hell? God dang it. Are we... Jesus.
I'm loving this already.
Sound effects you have on there. Can I do sound effects?
I don't think so.
Whatever, you're in charge here. Anyway, welcome to Five Stripe Final, the only highly distributed audio discussion discussing all things Atlanta United. Again, big game coming up this Saturday against Orlando City Soccer Club. Last week, after a 1-1 draw against Portland, where Joe left me by myself in Mercedes-Benz Stadium with the lights turned out, I teased a special guest. I teased a special guest coming your way for this big preview. And we are happy to say that it totally worked out in every way. Ladies and gentlemen, Jason Kreis. Did you invite him, Joe?
I didn't get the memo.
Crap. Huh. Well, I guess it's just us. You know.
Sorry about that, y'all.
These things fall through. We were
a couple special guests,
but it's cool.
They say they're going to help. They say they're going to come on, and then next thing you know,
nothing.
You get ghosted. That's what we call it in the biz.
In the biz, yes. In the biz of sliding into people's DMs and begging them to come on our HDAD of all things. No one even responds back. What the hell's an HDAD though? They just kind of ignore us. It's very rude.
Yeah. Yeah.
Very rude.
Did want to say though, we are going to plan on trying to get more guests on this version of the show on our preview show. So just look out for that. Eventually someone will respond to us and then we will be able to interview them and ask them dumb questions.
If you guys, the HDAD army, want to go out there and just start bombarding people you want to see on the show with requests, I'm sure like all 10 of you could really do some damage out there in the Twitter sphere.
Gabe has a lot of influence.
Gabe and Cherb Street both wish, man. Ah, gosh, those jerks. Anyway, let's get on to the preview. Yeah.
Yeah.
Nah. This one goes down Saturday, 7 p.m. Eastern time at Mercedes-Benz Stadium in the heart of Atlanta, Georgia. Orlando City SC comes to town. This one will be on ESPN if you can't make it into the stadium, or if you're driving around your car, you can listen to it on 92.9. The game, Joe Patrick, a rivalry game, no matter what they say. No matter what they say, even if Orlando does happen to be, completely trash right now, and it's hilarious.
That's why they don't want it to be a rivalry.
Right, exactly. Is it even worth our time to be annoyed with these people who can't even string a win together in two games against Montreal?
It's like every weekend, I don't know how to quite compare it. It's like every weekend, you know, I'm looking at our result, kind of scanning the results around the league. And Orlando's just always one I look for. It's like a car crash that when you're stuck in traffic and you're just waiting to see what's up around the curve there, what happened. You're just waiting to see what that result was. And every week when this losing streak grows, I almost feel bad. Like I'm almost like, oh my god, are you serious? Like they lost to Montreal again.
Again, they had two chances in a row to beat Montreal and lost. Both times, not even drew. They lost. They lost, y'all. They come
like
into this
one player you have to defend.
Yeah, really. Of course, that they had two own goals in those games, so they couldn't even not score on themselves. Oh my god, it's so good. They come into this one 6 wins, 1 draw, 9 losses. 7 games ago, they had 6 wins, 1 draw, and 2 losses. Yes, they have lost 7 games in a row. Have not even gotten a point in the last 7 games. They come in with 19 points. That puts them 8th in the East and 16th in the Supporters Shield standings. At one point, they were on like the MLS power rankings that I think Matt Doyle does for MLS.com. Or excuse me, MLSsoccer.com. MLS.com is a rental site. No, really, check that out. But they were like 4th. They were like 4th in this power rankings. People like were buying into the hype a little bit. All of a sudden, Christ had turned things around, and then they just fell off a cliff. And it all started with one team, Joe Patrick. You know what team that was?
I think it was us.
We broke that 6-game win streak that they were on at that point, and they've lost 7 in a row.
It's crazy. I mean, they spent so much money in the off season and in the summer transfer window last year. You kind of expected them to be better, like at least be better than you were last year. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, there was always going to be a little bit of an adjustment period coming in for them with these new players, but eventually they'd get it figured out. And actually what has happened was kind of the opposite, which is that they got off to a hot start and then just have completely collapsed. And I think it's the reason why, you know, they've been rumored for Caleb Porter, and then apparently Taylor Twellman is reporting that Caleb Porter has turned down the job.
He turned it down. Caleb Porter turned it down. He said, no, I have better things to do, like play Bunko in wherever the hell I'm at in my life. Caleb Porter. He's doing nothing else. Nothing else. But somehow going to Orlando City was worse than nothing. Dear God. It's such a train wreck. It's beautiful. Continue. Sorry.
I was scared.
That was what Caleb Porter said when he went down to meet with Orlando.
What was that? Go on.
I was scared. I was scared.
I hate this.
If you have anybody who has audio bit recommendations that I can play, I still need to get the Cookie Crumbles on here.
From Jeff, yes.
From Jeff. If there are any other bits, please let me know.
I do want to say that the players that he has brought in have probably been the best players for Orlando this year. It's just that doesn't mean a whole lot. People like Mohamed El-Mahir have been very good defensively. Yoshi Otun has been good. Dominic Dwyer has been decent. Lamine Sané has been all right. Cliche Clifton has been okay. And Miram has been total garbage. But, relative to the team, those have been your best players. And these are guys that were brought in. It's just that it's not cohesive enough to work.
One might say they've been poorly coached. Am I right?
Wow.
Like, I mean, these are good players that they have. It's just been a poorly managed team. So, and in all seriousness, like, why would Caleb Porter want to go take over that team where he has no room to build his own program there? Like, their TAM is gone. Their TAM is tied up, and it's not coming back. So, it's going to be interesting. Maybe they'll just stick with Bobby Murphy for a while or something. I don't know. Bobby Murphy, by the way, great MLS name.
Oh, incredible. Incredible no name. Incredible. He is the interim coach right now. Of course, they fired Jason Kreis with that epic news dump. I guess it was a week ago or so.
taking out the trash on a Friday.
Right after the Portugal-Spain game that was so incredible. Eyes of the world. Looking everywhere but Orlando, they decided to just tweet it out right then. It was incredible. Bobby Murphy takes over to lead them to new heights, to glory. He's the interim coach. He's the guy who actually took over for Heath when Heath was fired midseason last year.
Oh, really?
So not his first trip in the saddle as an interim coach for the Big Purple down there. And the funniest part about the thing is they were coming off a loss to Montreal, who was awful. Their next game, as Murphy takes over, is against Montreal. And it's kind of like a person who's been watching a scenario from afar and has been sitting there saying, I know exactly how I can fix this. I know the perfect thing to do right now. So Bobby Murphy comes in and immediately changes to a 3-4-3, and they still lose. They didn't get all – you would think – well, I think the thought process was, well, our defense has been terrible. What if we took away more defenders so those terrible players weren't out there? We'll have more offense, right? We may come mm-hmm. away with this with more offense. The front three of Miram, Dwyer, and Josue Coleman did not get a shot off. Not a shot on target. They
oh
did not
God.
Get a shot off against Montreal. Montreal. God dang it. Against Montreal. Good Lord.
I'm sorry. I'm getting carried away. I'm like a kid with toys.
It's good. No, this is exactly what Bobby Murphy tried to do. He tried to start dropping in sound effects and everything, and it failed miserably. Who knows if they'll go with that back three against us. I feel like that'd be a terrible, terrible, terrible idea. But nothing else is working for them right now. They're 17th in expected goals allowed. If we're looking at the chances they've allowed, that's 25.9 on the year. 12th in expected goals for, 23.3. 14th in expected goal differential. Of course, that was not the case when they were playing pretty well for a while there. They did, again, a 6-game win streak before the apocalypse happened down in O-Town. Goal differential went from 0.6 to negative 1.7 in that span, that expected goal differential. They outshot folks by 2 shots a game, then dropped down to negative 0.3. So pretty much everything that was going well for them has immediately kind of flipped on its head. There have been a few injuries. Jonathan Spector has been out for a bit. There's been a couple other folks who have been out. Of course, Spector, the captain, back there for him in the defense. I think it's really interesting that a lot of their struggles have been defensively, and it makes a lot of sense. There's not been a whole lot of consistency at the back. Joe Patrick, Orlando City tied for the most goals conceded in MLS with San Jose and Montreal. They've given up 31 goals on
good
year.
Lord.
They rank last in MLS with DC United and Seattle. They only have 1 shutout or clean sheet on the year. They've given up 2 goals or more in 11 of their 15 matches at one point. So I make that 12 of 16 now after the loss to Montreal. Joe Bendick has been awful as well. It's just a whole cavalcade of things. He's 19th in MLS with 42 saves. He's just been terrible.
This next stat is the worst. Go with it.
Oh, it's so good. So good. And it could be very important for us. In 16 games, they've allowed the first goal 14 times.
That 14. Is insane. That is insane. But, you know, I think just overall kind of wrapping all this stuff up, I think one of the conclusions is that, and we saw it, no one has got a better glimpse of this than Atlanta fans. They're just so poor mentally. Like, they just collapse. You know, we were talking earlier, like, they have quality players available. They have quality. It's not like any of these individuals they have, like, if you look at their defense, on their defensive line, Jonathan Spector, very solid defender. This guy Sané came from a big club in the Bundesliga. Scott Sutter has been around MLS. Like, these guys are not like, you know, these inexperienced or untested players. These guys just can't keep it together mentally. And we saw it in Atlanta. They just had a complete capitulation, and it basically handed us the win. And it almost seems to, I don't mean to get like super like trolly about, you know, the Orlando fan base or whatever, because we try to be a little bit professional here on this on this show. Well, a little bit. We try to give you something.
Nothing says professional like take me out of the ball game sound effects or whatever we're doing over there.
But it really sounds like it permeates through the entire club. Like this kind of mindset, it is just so chaotic, you know. Like, I would, you know, while they're low in expected goals allowed, they probably lead the league in expected middle fingers received, you know, from the fans. Like, the fans are kind of on edge. They're kind of wired the entire time. You know, they make these what seem to be like impulsive signings from the front office, and it just everything seems to trickle down through this club. And it, you know, we saw it when Kreis was in charge, there just didn't seem to be any sort of cohesion amongst the team. And just, I'm not even talking tactically. I'm just talking mentally and kind of being on the same page and having each other's backs and like that kind of like team camaraderie that you want to have. They just don't seem to have it. And you know, you see like with the fans will get on their backs pretty quickly. It's just kind of, you know, it just feels rotten to me. Like it just feels like a very sour place. So they need somebody to come in and just kind of, you know, be the captain of the ship and turn it around. And I'm talking about, you know, whatever manager they do end up bringing in. I mean, I don't think it's going to be Bobby Murphy, but, you know, they need someone that kind of has the credibility to get everybody on the same page, because it's just a mess right now.
I've talked about it before on this show that I think Orlando is not necessarily a sleeping giant, but a sleeping very, very tall person that's been hunched over for a real long time.
Sure, sure.
There's a good chance that one day this is going to be a team that's very successful and gives teams a lot to reckon with. It's interesting to see them fail so miserably in so many different ways when they have money. They have a fan base that cares, a fan base that wants good things to happen and has high attendance numbers and has the stadium they can go to that has great facilities, that has a training ground of their own, that at one point did have that USL team. They'll be back next year. But has all these different things that generally conspire to create a team and a franchise that does very, very well. It just hasn't happened. And I think you're spot on with the culture comments. Just the culture is not there yet. And that starts with the front office and it starts with the manager.
You look at, I mean, look at what happened with the Kyle Larin saga last year. I mean, that was a scenario where, I mean, you know, aside from Larin's off the field issues, you know, they had this, a good striker to pair with Dom Dwyer. You know, that they have this great piece, and okay, maybe he's unhappy. Maybe he wants to leave, et cetera. They just handled it so poorly. Like they tried to treat him like a child. Like he couldn't leave. They couldn't come to some sort of an agreement with him where, you know, he could at least like, you know, play out a little bit more of the season and agree to a sale or something like that. You know, it's just like there's just no control in the club. It feels like to me from the outside.
I know I make a lot of college football references on the show, but I think the closest comparison is Tennessee right now, where you've got a program that should be succeeding just based on fan base and everything else, but is so toxic and so we're gonna set the town on fire when we make a coach hiring kind of thing.
Yeah, that
it just doesn't work. It's not there right now. Whatever the infrastructure provides is not translating into a positive culture.
Yeah, I was going to say the same thing. I'm not like I mean, obviously I follow all of college football. I'm not big into SEC. My family's from Big Ten country. Reminds me of like what Michigan's going through right now, where you have like all this promise. And every time there's like a new coaching hire, it's like, oh yeah, this is going to be the turnaround. This is going to be the turnaround. And then like, you know, as soon as there's a bad run, fans get on the backs. It's and the players lose confidence. It's that kind of thing. So
I could totally see if they do pick up Scolari being their Harbaugh of someone who comes in and just says a bunch of crazy shit and doesn't actually win anything.
Well, I think Atlanta has kind of, you know, set a precedent is kind of the right way to phrase it. But, you know, I think that it just has gone to show what a manager, when you hire a manager that has that kind of international clout or status, like a Tata Martino, it just helps everybody get on board. Like everybody has, you know, everybody knows to defer to this guy and everybody kind of puts their faith in this person. I'm not sure everybody in the club in Orlando, if you're talking about front office people or players, put that kind of faith in Jason Kreis. You know, like they weren't all in with Jason Kreis. I don't think at any point there was always doubt. So it's harder to commit to, you know, his philosophy and that kind of a thing when you just have that lingering doubt. Nobody in Atlanta is doubting Tata Martino. You know, like all the players are fully committed to him.
Except on
the
Twitter.
The board is fully committed to him. Yeah, yeah. So, you know, I think they do need to, like, they've kind of screwed themselves to this point. And at this point, they need, like, honestly, to make a big signing to kind of help rectify this. Because I think that that's really the only way. I don't think you're going to get through what they're going through with like a, you know, come up on the come up kind of coach.
Yeah, no. And it's interesting you talk about the precedent set by Atlanta United. How coincidental is it that Orlando City is looking towards South America as a place to pull their next coach from? Someone who will have clout, like you said, on an international level, and someone who they may be able to attract young players just like we've been able to, just because of the name of our manager, who is well-respected in a big, big way down there. So it'll be interesting to see how they end up with. It might help at first just to go ahead and get the same back line out on the pitch for Orlando City. I do want to move back kind of towards just kind of looking at them as a team
Now.
But the Lions have placed 12 different back lines on the pitch in 16 MLS matches. So just the four times I think they've had a same back line out there, which is just insane. Which you talk a little bit about the cohesion, you talk about the mental aspect of it. I'm sure it's got to be difficult when you're playing with a brand new bunch of guys just about every time. And it has not been their first choice guys either. We may actually see their first choice back line play for one of the first times all year against us in Atlanta. That is if they don't go with a back three.
Yeah, and that's one of those things. Michael Parkhurst, I think, talked about it. I want to say it was either last week or the week before. But it's so important on the back line, especially to have consistency, because those guys need to have trust in one another. Like when you're defending, your fifth defender is the offside line, you know, and it's like you have to kind of to make use of that. You have to have full confidence in your partners along either side of you. And when you don't have that offside line can work against you, and often does. So yeah, that is an issue for them for sure. And it's much harder to play with rotating guys at the back than it is to, like, if you were like missing someone in your attack, like kind of like how we've done the last 2 years. You know, we've missed Joseph last year, but we were kind of able to work around that. This year it's been Tito who's missed a bunch of games, Barco in the beginning of the season. But you know, those things you can work around better, and it doesn't really affect you as much. When you're losing guys at the back, that's when it really starts showing up in the standings, because you start leaking goals and you're just not able to work around it as well.
Yeah, again, this is maybe the worst defensive team in the league right now, and it doesn't look like it's getting better anytime soon. Looking at them in an attack, of course, you're going to have Dwyer up there, who just torched us when he came to Atlanta last time. I believe two goals in that one. He had a brace and a layer and had the other.
Two. Yeah. Yeah.
But fortunately for Atlanta, Yoshi Otun is listed as still on international duty, even though his team did not make it to the round of 16 in the World Cup. So he will probably not be available for the game Saturday, which is really good news, because he's been the engine for them all year when good things do happen. 3 goals, 4 assists for him. And Joe, you've mentioned at points how Miguel Almiron kind of makes the attack go for Atlanta. Yoshi Otun, very much in the same vein for Orlando.
Yeah, I think he's their best player. no real issues there. He's the guy who makes everybody, but you know, he's like, I call him like the oil in the engine, you know, just like you need somebody there that makes everything work correctly. And he's kind of that guy for them.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And like we said, the people going forward for Orlando have not been terrible, I guess, this year. Dwyer does have 7 goals, no assists, but does have the 7 goals. Kleshton, 3 goals, 3 assists. Even Christian Aguita has 3 goals. But then you look at someone like a Justin Miram, who is expected to come in and do big things for Orlando City. He has 1 goal. It was against us. It was a total fluke.
Yeah. That's right. There was like a huge rebound, and it just came right to him. Mm-hmm. It was like pretty much a... Did Alec Can play that game? Was that Can?
I want to say, yeah. I think so.
Yeah, I think it was. I'm pretty sure it was.
That would have been right after the Sporting game, I think, where Brad had the red card. So, yeah.
That was it. Yeah. Okay. Out with the red card. Yeah. Yeah. So, Miram has been terrible. And, you know, we're talking about all the, you know, bad juju going on in Orlando. You know, there's been like terrible bad blood between him and the fans. Like he's been kind
That's
of
right.
nasty. I think like this, I don't really know the full extent of it, but there's just not like, they don't really like him and he isn't like them. It seems like, he kind of has like a,
how could
a
anyone
bitterness.
Just not love the sweethearts down there in Orlando? Stunning, stunning. It's interesting to me, Joe Patrick. It's not interesting to me that he doesn't like Orlando fans because they're garbage and terrible people. But it's interesting to me that we were, at least on the stat sheet, Orlando looked like the better team for a little bit in that game. I think Atlanta really decided to kind of sit back at one point there. They ended up with about 45% possession and were outshot 11-8 by Orlando. Orlando ended up with more shots on target. And I'm just trying to kind of pace my mind back through that game mm-hmm. to kind of see why it may have ended up like that.
Well,
but
this was,
we went up 2-0. So
yeah,
I think
this,
we were just,
I mean, this was kind of our time in the season where we were doing this on a regular basis. We did, it was kind of a similar story against LA Galaxy where mm-hmm. we would come out in this 3-5-2. We'd play pretty well. First half, we were pretty clinical. In this game, Greg Garza got brought down. He went down pretty easy in the box. We got a penalty there, and then Barco had a great outside of the foot finish. For the second one, we just kind of got two goals. And then what seemed to happen to us in that formation is we just kind of, I don't know if it was a fitness thing where we were just too tired to you know, run and chase down and close down people in the second half. And so we just sat deep. But yeah, it was just one of that time in the season where we just sat deep and absorbed pressure in the second half and just kind of saw games out, but it wasn't pretty that second half. We were pretty much hanging on, and then their fans started throwing trash on the field, which pretty much ended the game.
And Will Johnson got all upset. The poor guy.
Yeah.
Poor guy. Yeah, no, that's about right. It's about right. Speaking of sitting back though, I'm really hoping that we go full throttle in this one. The big question mark this time though, rather than the formation, is what do we do about Darlington Nagbe? Nagbe announced with an adductor injury. That's like the inside of your thigh there, guys. If you want to just rub that. It's not fun. You can't really run or do anything on it. Out about 2 to 3 months. Joe Patrick, what do we do?
Well, I mean, I think we're in agreement here that Gressel is going to be the one who comes into midfield. It's either going to be Gressel or Kratz, surely. Like that's, I don't think he's going to make some swooping change where Tata Martino like changes the formation back again to a three and all that. I don't think that's happening. I think we'll stick with what we've been doing in the last few games and go with the 4-2-3-1. We'll probably stick Gressel in there. So Gressel, here's my thing with Gressel as a center mid. Thought he started out playing that position last year. Actually, he started the New York Red Bulls That's game right. playing a central midfield spot, and he played it for like, I think he held that position for the first like, you know, 3 or 4 games, and he kind of faded away, kind of got worse. I think he kind of had some initial success because people, you know, teams didn't know who he was, what he was good at, you know, what his strengths were. So he was kind of, once teams kind of realized that his first touch wasn't so great, that they could dispossess him in dangerous areas, I think that's when we saw him kind of move out wide. And that's always been my fear with him ever since then, is his tendency to lose the ball in midfield, you know, like in a dangerous position where there's an immediate counter on for the other team. Other than that, I think he gives you a lot of really good things. Obviously he can move the ball around well. Once he's like in possession of the ball, he can pick out a great pass. He's got really good vision. It's just when he receives those balls in congested areas, tight spaces, when a guy's closing him down, I'll be honest, I'm still not super confident in him, but you know, hopefully yeah. I see something you know, this game that alleviates those concerns. But I also feel a little bit better because we've seen Tata Martino using him as a central midfielder like in recent games, either as a sub, or sometimes he'll like bring on a sub and he'll, you know, put Julian Gressel, he'll move his position basically during the game into central midfield. So that at least tells me that Tata is seeing something from him, in training that says that he's more capable of this role than he was, you know, in the first few games of his rookie season. So, which is understandable. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think that's what we'll see.
Yeah, absolutely no one at me about this because I'm tired of it, but I think Gressel, for 90 minutes at the very least, is still an improvement over Kevin Kratz for 90 minutes of that position.
I think I agree.
Kind of the blunt truth of it. Kratz is great. Kratz is a specialist, but I think Gressel is just going to offer more. And it's gonna be sustainable for the time being, I think, and especially against an Orlando team that's been struggling, to say the least. I think you go full throttle. I think Tito on the wing, Gressel in the midfield. Let's go. Let's ride.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. And I think Tito's going to come out like a bullet shot out of a gun. Yep. This one. I mean, he looked so dangerous against Portland. And, yeah, he just presents something totally different at the right wing than what Gressel does. And that's not try to, you know, say that Gressel hasn't been amazing this season, because he has. But Tito just offers something different. He offers a goal scoring presence. I was actually chatting with our friend Teodo Football earlier this week, kind of just talking about, you know, some of the things that bug us about the team or what we need and whatever. And it just seems like without Tito, we're just very reliant on Joseph to score goals. Like, we don't, like, Almiron will make a run into the box, but it almost seems like Almiron's runs into the box are meant so that he can then pass the ball back to somebody else. And I feel like kind of the same, like, Barco's kind of the same way, where they're not making, like, runs that someone who wants to score a goal would make. You know, like, they're kind of getting into a position where they can feed somebody. And I feel like Tito wants to score goals. Like, that he, you know, he's like a striker. He just plays from, like, a wider position. So I think that will be really helpful in this game, and I think it will open up more opportunities for Joseph.
No, I completely agree. Completely agree. It's going to be a lot of fun, I think. We'll get to my score prediction later, but
yeah,
I'm feeling pretty good about it.
I think it's going to be a fun game as well. Mm-hmm. I think there will be a lot of goals.
Yes. Yes. Good news is, Joe Patrick, good news is, while we have you here, Julian Gressel, even if he does take over in that midfield spot, it's not going to be for long. You know who's coming, Joe Patrick? Do you know who is coming? One more time. That's right. It's the thick fielder. The thick fielder.
I love this nickname. I hope it catches on.
Right. It's already caught. It is caught. Mucho caught. This time, Joe Patrick, thick fielder, Eric Remedy.
Remedy.
Is that right?
No, I think you nailed it. You nailed it. Looking forward to this guy. Yeah. I'm a little concerned. Like, okay, we're not concerned, but so, you know, the team put out this video of him spraying these long passes from sideline to sideline. I kind of, you know, added some fuel to that fire, saying that it was exciting, and I think some other people did as well. I think Jason Longshore mentioned it as well. And don't get me wrong, still very excited about his ability to do that. Don't think he's going to be Pirlo. You know, like, he had an 81% pass. I feel like people are kind of getting built up, like this is like a very, like, a strength of his. I'm not sure how, like, often he's going to connect on these passes, but just having somebody who's willing to do it is going to be a huge help, just as someone who, because we don't really have anyone who even tries those passes from midfield. The only people on our team who really try those kinds of balls right now are Leandro Gonzalez Pires and Michael Parkhurst, and they kind of have a better angle to do it as well. But absolutely. You know, he had an 81% passing pass completion percentage in La Primera. So to put that in perspective, this was kind of interesting. I went, and because I was a little curious about that. And just like, because 81%, what does that mean? You know, is that good? Is it bad? So I went and looked, and in La Primera, he was 81%, and that ranked him like 92nd out of 400. So that's like pretty good, like top, you know, top quarter about.
For sure, especially for a defensive midfielder.
Yeah. And then in MLS, that same percentage would only rank him like 130 out of 400, like basically like almost exactly the middle of the pack. So right. That kind of says something about the league, but it also, you know, just, I don't know what the hell it says, but take it for what it's worth. I don't expect him to be like this amazing passer, I guess is what I'm trying to say. But I do think that his passes will help the team.
Absolutely. And I think what you're saying about him taking those risks and trying to play those long balls and spreading things out a little bit, I think that could be something that helps us unlock teams a little bit more. It's like if you were a basketball team that never took three-point shots. You know, everyone would just kind of crowd the paint, and you would never be able to really get any good opportunities. And looking at us kind of past few games with teams kind of bunkering and crowding the paint, so to speak, unlocking a few long balls like that, unleashing them, I guess, would probably help us out just a little bit. Really excited about what he can do, and also he's going to be an asset defensively. I think Rob Ushery called him, he's not fast Jeff, but he's mobile Jeff.
Yeah,
I think that makes a lot of sense from a defensive standpoint.
Yeah, and I don't think, you know, like, I don't think that him having incomplete, you know, passes is necessarily a bad thing. I don't think we probably had too much possession against Portland. I think this is just my personal theory when it comes to possession. I think there's like a sweet spot that you want to be in. That's kind of like 55-ish%, like something like that. I feel like once you start having way too much possession, if you don't have a lead, you become easy to defend because teams know that you're not basically when you have that much possession, it basically shows that you're not trying anything that's too risky. You know, you're basically trying to just, you're making sure you keep the ball if you're up in the, you know, 60% range, mid 60s. So I think that, you know, yeah, he'll make us a little more unpredictable, which is what we need. I feel like we've been a little predictable lately, and teams like Portland have been able to come in. Montreal has done the same thing. Even Philadelphia Union did the same thing, even though they lost. They probably would have won that game if it was 11-11. And they basically just came in, sat back, and let us pass the ball around, knowing that, you know, they just defended the dangerous areas. But I think that with Remedy, he will make us a little more unpredictable.
We won't see him most likely until the 15th against Seattle. That's World Cup final.
That would be the first possible time he could play. Yeah.
Yes, because the transfer window opens on the 10th of July. Mm-hmm. So we won't see him for a little bit.
When he can be registered.
Obviously not available for the Orlando City game. But hopefully you're ready for the Orlando City game after all this information we've thrown at you guys. Let's go ahead and wrap it up though, Joe Patrick. Let's go ahead and get a prediction for this one. Go ahead.
I'm going to go with, I think we will, Atlanta United will win 3-2. I think it's going to be high scoring. And I do think I'm giving the Orlando two goals. I think we could, I'm kind of building in one Gressel mistake that leads to a goal in central midfield.
Okay,
I don't even think, I think that's just kind of something you should probably expect at this point, you know, Plant just he's slotting into a new position. So yeah, 3-2.
Not bad. I'm going to one up you a little bit. No, I'm going to say we take it to him. I'm going to say 4-0. Oh yeah. Exactly. Well deserving of the sound effect there. No one at me. I'm not a jinx. Everyone shut up. 4-0 though. That's my call. I think we just take it to them. I think they're still terrible. I think they have no idea what they're doing. I think especially if they go back three, they're going to get torched by someone like Tito, who's going to maybe exploit some wingbacks there. It's going to be a whole lot of fun to watch, I think, and going to be the biggest win in this rivalry's history. And keep Orlando off the board still, because they've never won ever against us. Isn't that fun? Interesting. I do want to bring up one thing, though. It's interesting to me, we have not taken it to Orlando at home ever.
Yeah.
We've needed comebacks to either, you know, go ahead again or tie it both times. You know, in the first home game we played against him, we needed a stoppage time goal from Tito. So it'd be real nice to just go out there Saturday and just whip up on him in front of 72,000 people.
I'll tell you, I think that I really think it's easier for them in this rivalry game, especially, to go on the road and play it. I don't think they want to play it in front of their home fans. I don't think they want that. I think it adds more pressure for them to play in front of their home fans in this big rivalry game.
All those hostile people wearing, I can't even think of a band name right now, but some terrible doom metal band from the 90s, all wearing those t-shirts. it wouldn't deal well with me either to be at basically the soccer version of a Hot Topic playing games. It'd just be rough. You know, how could I focus? Good news is not a lot of Orlando fans going to even be allowed in the stadium because of, you know, their band. From
that's
the
right
the supporters groups are anyway, so none of our friends over Iron Lion Firm or Ruckus who think that literally anyone cares about TIFO leaks. I'm not gonna get into it. Get over your arts and crafts project, guys.
One of their fans was arrested, and that person either worked or had worked for the team. There was something like that.
I wouldn't put anything past him at this point.
It was like they were like in ticketing or something, you know, like it was just kind of like they weren't involved with like the players or anything. But
Orlando can't even get their website together, Joe Patrick. I was looking at articles earlier and a lot of copy editing needed to go on. That's all I'm going to say. Anyways, if you see one out in the wild, don't engage with it. They're more scared of you than you are of them, but still probably not a good idea to antagonize them. They will fight back. They will make you listen to Creed and do all sorts of terrible, terrible things. So just don't engage. Don't engage, guys.
They'll definitely give you the middle finger.
Oh, yeah. They're real good at that.
That's their thing.
That's their one talent. If middle fingers were Tam, they would still probably not have a whole lot left, to be honest. But it would help. It would help. Anyways, big thanks to Jason Christ for joining us on the show. Love having him on. Great guy as always. Wish him the best in his next endeavor of coaching some USL3 team, wherever he ends up. Going to be exciting for Jason. Great guy. Great guy. Big thanks to Joe Patrick for joining us on the show today.
Thank you. Thank you.
Oh, of course. My pleasure. My pleasure to sit here and listen to you barrage me with sound effects. Ryder, this one started.
I was scared.
seven p.m. Saturday, Mercedes-Benz Stadium. Be there. Be loud. See you guys then. Bye, y'all.
Bye.